Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
That's a wrap on week three in the National Football League. So we will look ahead to week four, but in doing so, we'll be checking out what's happening in our rearview mirror. Get Mike Harmon on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Mike, let's just dive into what we saw most recently from week three, and that was the Dallas Cowboys taking it to the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football. Aside from Eli Manning's double bird, what was your biggest takeaway that we saw from this NFC East showdown with the Cowboys prevailing by 20?
Let's see. Rumors of Ezekiel Elliott's demise were greatly exaggerated, so hopefully you were able to buy low on him and fleece another owner in your league. 17 carries, 95 yards, the two touchdowns. Almost had the receiving touchdown, right? Falls just short there. Mm-hmm. But a big day for him. And then from the other side, looking at Jalen Hurts, I think we're going to be in for a bunch of these where you have a strong fantasy performance, but a lot of hand-wringing watching it come together.
Yeah. It was, as a Miles Sanders guy in a couple of leagues, one of those frustrating nights. And that's kind of my takeaway with this is I know we're going to get into Matt Nagy and the Bears at some point. But even on what happened on Monday night with the Eagles, I can't believe that the Eagles thought that our best option was to let Jalen Hurts air it out. And even though Jalen Hurts wasn't awful airing it out, he had the bad underthrow on the interception on the first drive. And now Philadelphia, even though they got the turnover late, just seemed to always feel like they were playing catch-up, never established the run. And Miles Sanders touched the ball five times on right. Monday night, had two carries, and one of those carries was for 24 yards, yet only saw the ball one other time on the ground and had three catches. I don't run away from Miles Sanders because I think what happened was Nick Sirianni got a lesson on how you need to handle things. So as the Eagles move forward and they have the Chiefs coming up in week four, I think you're going to see an overcorrection in that aspect and maybe rely a little bit more on the running game than trying to have Jalen Hurts try to win a shootout against Patrick Mahomes in week four.
Yeah, the curiosity for this one, Dan, as you said, the Cowboys dominated the first quarter and you can say first half, right? 20-7. But at no point did they try to establish a run, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you abandoned that, I don't know why you're suddenly afraid of the Dallas defense, but wouldn't you want to slow things down? You know, maybe to get your defense enough time to go to the oxygen tank for all the plays they were on the field? I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it to me because, I mean, when we got to halftime, what was it, 42 plays to 18?
Yeah, it was, 17. Dallas had the ball for 17 minutes, the graphic said, at one point out of the first 20 of the game.
Yeah, and the number of first downs was just astounding when you break it down. And then your first drive, you come out, nice gainer to Goddard, and then Goddard, obviously, they're still winded or whatever you want to say. The next pass was just off his fingertips. Would have been an easy first down. A lot of green if he'd been able to haul it in, but led him just a little too much. And then the next pass is, you know, Devontae Smith falling down and doing a somersault as Trayvon Diggs runs the other way, 59 yards for a touchdown. And just like that, now your run game is completely eliminated at that point. So you get the saver points. And, yeah, Sanders is another guy that, you know, buy low. Opportunities are going to be there against other opponents because first 2 weeks of this, look, we're 3 weeks in, right? And everybody's doing the I told you so's. Sorry, I just, before we recorded, Dan, just finishing my 4 hours with Jason Smith, who's taking victory laps in a couple of circumstances. I'm like, it's week three! And so just kind of get
is it pause. Is it fair to call him out when he's not on the podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you're going to call a guy in the top five and brag about it, shouldn't he be in the top five?
Yeah.
Right? That's the point. Like, if you say a guy's like, hey, I picked them for the Super Bowl and they didn't make the Super Bowl, then I was wrong. You know, come on, Smith.
It's least, close, you know, but not quite. And yeah, it's only and it's only 3 weeks. There's a lot of football to be played.
Come on, Smith.
Yeah, but you know, he likes, those are his favorite words in the English language. I hate to say I told you so, but ... and then we fill in the blank. But either way, I mean, Jalen Hurts is giving you your fantasy returns, so certainly in your daily lineups and for even your season long, I mean, he's certainly in consideration every week as a QB1. Just, I don't know that I'd want to watch the games, right? A lot of guys that place big bets down on games, they're just running numbers. They're not sitting there and watching and agonizing for 3 hours. And for fantasy purposes with the Eagles going forward, if you've got Jalen Hurts, I don't think I want to do that either.
Sure. But with Kansas City coming to town next week, maybe hold off till week 5 to make that determination.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's see how many of the defenders get back and healthy for Kansas City.
Yeah.
In week 4, fair. Right? Like Chris Jones not being available. Pretty big loss this past week.
No, Frank Clark, yeah. But the point about the Eagles is that there's I was disappointed in just the complete lack of Miles Sanders, and mm-hmm. that's why my advice to anybody that has Miles Sanders or wants to go out and get him, he is going to go under the Ronald Jones rule. And the Ronald Jones rule, for those of you that don't know in fantasy football, I actually just made it up prior to today's episode. But the Ronald Jones rule is this. Right when you bench a guy, he's going to break a 90-yard touchdown run. Now, actually, you could have called it the Miles Sanders rule because he had a couple of long runs last year after some stinkers. But Ronald Jones from Tampa, you remember, he had that like 96-yard, 98-yard touchdown run after people were just finally fed up because they didn't know what Bruce Arians was going to do with his lineup. That's what could happen with Miles Sanders because the similar situations happened with the Eagles last year. He still has that big playability, so I would not move away from Miles Sanders. And I'd actually, Mike, I'd move towards Dalton Schultz as a tight end pickup for the Cowboys. Like that was my other takeaway from what we saw at the last game of week 3. For this simple fact alone, not only did Dalton Schultz get in the end zone twice, what I really liked about it, he's been targeted 15 times this year by Dak Prescott and has 14 receptions. So there's somewhat of a rapport between them in the first 3 weeks. And whenever he gets the ball thrown to him, he's going to be able to at least get something with it. It's not like an Evan Engram where you get 3 receptions on 10 targets. It's not going to happen. Dalton Schultz is making the most of it. So I like Dalton Schultz as maybe a tight end 2, or when the bye weeks start coming in a couple of weeks, possible fill-ins depending on what you have on your bench or what you have in your starting lineup.
As you say, though, Dan, I mean, we only have a few set-it-and-forget-it Ronco-like products at the position.
Sure.
So for many folks, based on this weekly target count, as he's supplanted Blake Jarwin as tight end 1 in Dallas, I mean, they're going to put up points. And now it's just a question of does he get that share going forward, right? CD Lamb took a little step back today, and you saw more of the focus with the run game, but he's running free and Dak's liking him. Yeah, I mean, he becomes a back-end, tight-end 1 play because they're going to put up points.
The Cowboys get that 41-21 win over the Eagles, and now we set our sights. Well, actually, I'm going to hold off on that. We're not going to set our sights on week 4 just yet. We will in a matter of minutes. It is the I Want Your Flex podcast. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. We do have to look back at what we predicted in our last segment and just some quick highlights. It might give me one reasons to start and give you one reason to bench a guy. I swung and missed on both. I gave you a reason to start Kenny Golladay. He did better than he did before, but unfortunately it wasn't good. 4 catches, 64 yards in the Giants' loss to the Falcons. Told you to bench Mike Evans because of Jalen Ramsey. Well, Evans became the favorite target of Tom Brady, at least when it came to actual catches. 8 catches for 106 yards. Didn't get into the end zone, so that was a bit of a saver there, but still led the Buccaneers with receptions with 8 in that buck 06 in that loss to the Rams.
Yeah, pretty crazy weekend overall. I mean, we had had an actual shutout in an NFL game. Not that you were expecting great returns from the Jets, but more of the Broncos just continue to take advantage of their early schedule. So good things there. We'll get into the Bears. That's just a long therapy session. I want to give you credit for something you said in the final 25 seconds of the last podcast.
Okay.
Do you remember what it was?
No, I don't.
You wondered aloud whether the Lions would have a home victory over the Ravens. You okay. Literally threw that line out there. And when I saw the kick and I saw the Justin Tucker make, I'm like, wow, Dan was so close to what would have been one of the upset of the week.
I'm glad you reminded me because I said this to someone today. I go, I can't remember if I said it on Doug's show, Doug Gottlieb's show on Fox Sports Radio, or if I said it on I Want Your Flex. I go, but I know I picked the Lions on one of the broadcasts, and I actually thought I did it on the show, and I couldn't remember, but it was here. It was here. I did. I picked the Lions straight up, and I was so I guess you could say I was 66 yards away from victory, but oh, so close.
Well, here's the thing, Dan, and I don't know if it's written out in the rule book. I'll have to get one of those dog-eared Bill Belichick copies. Can you send someone back there to swat it away like your Mutombo?
No, you can't. You cannot do that. I actually heard that you cannot do that. It would be a great idea, but I know that is not allowed because I don't know if it's something like the kick has to be blocked within, like, I don't know, like, you know, a certain area within the line of scrimmage. I believe that is the case.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I know.
That would be kind of fun. What'd he do? He leapt up and he stole a field goal away.
The Lions have signed Boban Marjanovic from Dallas Mavericks to guard the goalposts in case it ever happens again. Or you just put Jamal Agnew back there if you're the Jaguars and let Cliff Kingsbury make stupid decisions. But that's
well,
for another
day. There's that too. We'll get that in another time. But for this week, yeah, I mean, you had some big performances. We didn't get the big fireworks from Daniel Jones that we anticipated, so I felt a little bad really pushing all in on him against Atlanta. So that one was kind of a kick in the teeth. You got a game effort out of Miami, something we talked about a little bit. You may not love Jacoby Brissett, but they'll make some plays. Fireworks, Cooper Kupp is now maybe the greatest wide receiver the world's ever known, running free once again in a depleted Tampa Bay secondary. Yes, we've got Brady versus Belichick, and everybody's going to want to talk about that all week. But, you know, we go down the line, Dan. I mean, there were some huge performances. I really thought I'd see more. Like, I certainly got the attempts from Ben Roethlisberger, but not the results. Did pick Cincinnati to win the game, so I'm feeling good there. Joe Burrow with his three touchdowns against, again the depleted Pittsburgh defense, missing T.J. Watt, exposes their soft underbelly, as it were. But for Ben Roethlisberger, thought, it was a decent spot, maybe. And you certainly got the attempts. And he also got a couple of gif-worthy moments of him falling to the ground, like he was one of the AT-AT walkers in the old Return of the Jedi, and they take in and they fly around, they get the cables and bring them down. Yeah, that's kind of what I felt like with Roethlisberger there. And then for the Tennessee Titans, with the big win over the Colts, looking at Ryan Tannehill having himself a day, and while he didn't have a huge yardage day, had a couple of turnovers, still 197-3 for fantasy owners. You will take that and run to the bank. Meanwhile, the misery for Carson Wentz, just like we told you was going to happen before the season, now it's a weekly bet, and Jim Irsay is even calling him out. So bad things there. Celebration for Mike Williams, I think, would be the last thing. You and I have talked about him quite a bit on this podcast thus far this season, Dan, and weekly dividends, including that game winner. Gutsy call, gutsy play, and a guy that's become a favorite for Justin Herbert.
Mike told you to beware of A.J. Brown, listed him as a cold sore. That was the case, and then he ended up leaving in the first half with a hamstring strain. Just had those three rushing yards. Deontay Johnson never ended up playing. You had Kyler Murray as your top quarterback. Kyler Murray got in rushing again in the end zone, over 300 yards, nothing in the air. But, yeah, you had Jalen Hurts in your top five plays for this week, and Jalen Hurts was a top five quarterback, at least when it came to passing yardage. He had the two touchdowns. Did have the interception. interception, so depending on how your league fares out. But I would say that you did hit on those as well, Mike Harmon. My three-point conversion, I thought Daniel Jones was going to get a win with the Giants. Didn't happen. Allentown, open for business, and Josh Allen sure was against Washington. My points of Palooza, I was off. I had Seattle and Minnesota. There are a lot of points of Paloozas, including the game we just talked about, 62 points put up between the Cowboys and Eagles. But that is us taking a look back at Week 3. And one of the things that I think is the biggest thing for me, Mike, now heading into Week 4, are two names that I don't know if I talked about much heading into the season, because my main takeaway when we were preparing for the 2021 season was from the quarterback position. And I'll repeat what I said again in the preseason because I need to adjust it now. I thought that there were only 8 quarterbacks that you would want to have on your fantasy team. And now I think I have to expand it a bit because Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins, I think, are every week starters. And when you see the emergence, it's not just Derek Carr throwing to Darren Waller anymore. I mean, now Henry Ruggs is starting to become a bit of an option for the silver and black. So it's not Darren Waller and his 19 targets that he had in week one. You mentioned we were talking about Peyton Barber before the show, kind of filling in and in having that role of Josh Jacobs. But he and Kenyon Drake each had 3 catches. Brian Edwards ended up having 3 catches for 89 yards. So Derek Carr has got guys to throw to, and Hunter Renfrow got into the end zone. So they're ample targets in Las Vegas. I don't think that now there's a shortage of that. And we know about all the weapons in Minnesota. I mean, Dalvin Cook didn't even play, and the Vikings ran over the Seahawks. And Kirk Cousins, if the Vikings weren't 1-2 in their record, I think Kirk Cousins would be getting a lot more pub for the play that he's gotten. I think he's now a quarterback that you can start week in and week out just because of the weapons Minnesota has, continues to have that rapport with Adam Thielen. So I'm expanding my quarterback play to include Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins. They can now get behind the velvet rope, Mike, and come into the starting quarterback club.
Look at that. Derek Carr might unblock you on Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. The Carr family is very active there in those notices. But, you know, for Derek Carr, you mentioned Edwards, and you get to Renfrow, and he's a guy that, you know, we'll get into the waiver wire pickups, but consistent target counts, spreading the ball around. I heard a clip with Carson Palmer talking with Dan Patrick on the network on Monday morning, and when asked about the Raiders and Derek Carr, he goes, he's playing with a different intensity. He didn't quite call it the level of mean, right, because we talk about guys running or tackling and whatever in that concept, but Derek Carr's more aggressive with the ball downfield and trying to make plays and throwing guys open, and, you know, having a safety valve like Renfrow there is huge. Obviously Waller has become one of those guys that, you know, he's in ink, he's a Sharpie in your lineup as one of the top 3 guys. But for Derek Carr, he's never been considered this way fantasy wise before the season. I think I ranked him maybe 22nd. And obviously, as it stands now, I'll have some egg on my face. But I still think that was higher than the industry consensus based on past performances and results, assuming, again, that more the running game would be the factor as you go. But Derek Carr has been fantastic. Kirk Cousins, I mean, they should be 3-0, right? They blew that game against Cincinnati. Kicker misses an easy chip shot that should have finished off week 2, and then they get the win here against Seattle. To your point, like, for fantasy purposes, he's a guy that's been consistent, and you've got 2 studs, not to mention your guy KJ Osborne, because we got to make sure we get at least 1 KJ Osborne mention in per the podcast here. As we look forward, target count may vary, but you know they're going to move the ball. Madison stepped in nicely for them. But Kirk Cousins, I agree with you. He's a vastly underrated fantasy option, and we've hit the point that until further notice or Jefferson or Thielen sustains an injury, yeah, he's got to be in your lineup.
He has not thrown an interception this season. 8 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. 2 games over 300 yards. So, yeah, he's had a quarterback rating of 106, 122.4, and 128.4. Pretty good. It's pretty good for Kirk Cousins.
Pretty good start there.
Yeah, he's now into that into that class of quarterbacks that I think that you can safely start in the National Football League. That was my big takeaway as we head into week four.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is just the ebb and flow of this, and like we do on radio, just overreacting, right, of deciding a guy's done. There's still a lot of matchup-based information that flows through. The quarterback position is the one where you've just got to have be resolute, at least to this point. We don't have enough sample size necessarily to know where the true train wrecks are. And where we have found those, you weren't starting those guys anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So push that aside. One of your three things was about Josh Allen, right, for last week. There were actually folks looking and going, I don't know that I'm digging what I'm seeing from the Buffalo offense. Right, and certainly completion percentage down and all of those concerns. And then they came out and absolutely demoralized what a team that I think everybody should be worried about in Washington. For me, you know, it's now that point of start believing more of the injury reports. And if a guy is questionable and we're chatting him up on a Sunday morning, I'm starting to lean more and more that those are indicators to just leave them on the bench. Not that they're going to say them directly, but there were a number of players in Sunday's game. We talk about A.J. Brown as a cold sore, didn't like the matchup. He leaves with an injury, but like a Darnell Mooney in Chicago, I don't know what they were doing, but he was listed with an injury and then was a non-factor altogether. And part of that is because the Bears were nice. I'm going to keep it clean so we keep our PG rating. They were awful, but you know, I wonder how much of it was they didn't trust that he could run burner routes. So perhaps paying a little more attention to those this season.
Maybe that should be our tagline. I want your flex. It's the fantasy podcast that doesn't cuss.
There's a lot of them that do, Dan. I've guessed it on a couple in the past, and I was like, wow, that's how we're going to ask a question, huh?
Oh, man. Okay. All right, Mike, who are your mother effers for week four? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
That was well played.
No, just kidding. What do the Bears do? I mean, you know, not only fantasy-wise, but just even big picture, because this whole thing is just a mess with Matt Nagy's comments on Monday saying he's not sure who's going to start in week four, which is – you could have gone a lot of different ways in answering that question. You could have just said something like, we want to see how Andy responds. We'll make a decision later in the week.
Like, no, and that's been one of my biggest pet peeves with this, Dan. For those unaware, my Chicago roots show in this particular story. I don't call for the heads of coaches very often, and even with two playoff appearances in the last 3 years, Dan, Matt Nagy often looks overwhelmed on the sideline, and I don't know that any coach loses press conferences more regularly than he does with some of the answers that get put out. From Monday's effort, he was 52 minutes late. For one, leading to some speculation. Like, well, did he get fired after that debacle? Like, no, he just came out and gave you some of these same bad answers. So you have Nick Foles there and didn't rule him out. Got the hand injury for Fields, but the x-rays came back negative. So more just a let's make sure we're good. But that puts a little wrinkle out there because it was the throwing hand was the report. And then with Dalton and the injury he sustained, most insiders in Chicago think it's a 2-3-4 week injury, not just a one and done, get him back on the field. But, you know, the biggest indictment of all of this was you had and you heard it from Garrett and all the members of the Cleveland defense of, well, we really thought they'd try to extend the pocket. And I guess it's the old Henry Winkler from The Waterboy. It's like he fakes. No, he pretends to fake. And that's kind of where we get into the cat and mouse game for Matt Nagy of, all right, I guess they expected them to roll the pocket, give him an opportunity to throw on the run, right? Because that's what most guys grow up doing anymore, Dan, right? 7-on-7 football. We've seen how many young quarterbacks at the collegiate level make those throws on the run accurately, and that's one of the things we've seen Justin Fields be able to do. That didn't exist in what was put out on Sunday afternoon, and just a lot of head-scratching of you have – this guy that you drafted with his skill set and we're going to run the same offense that we did with Andy Dalton, even though they're completely different players, and we're not going to take advantage of the skill set that Justin Fields had. Also, we didn't do anything to protect him from the fact that we know our offensive line is terrible. That's the bigger part. It's like, you know who you are. You and I talked about it weeks before preseason even began of how bad that offensive line potentially could be. And on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns, they showed it as you watched Myles Garrett walk in unabated multiple times on Justin Fields, who also, because this is where it gets difficult, Dan, is you have two things that are running concurrently. Nagy could still have called a terrible game, which he did. And nobody did. A lot of people calling for his head. It's like, welcome to the party. Go listen to anything I've yelled about the Bears for the last couple of years. The apologies for Mitchell Trubisky for the offense that was run while he was there. So that's part two. And then part three, we can all still say that Matt Nagy might have been right in his assessment of where Justin Fields was in terms of field readiness, because he looked lost, and getting hit as frequently as he did probably is going to be part of that. But in terms of hot routes, reads, all of those things, it's slow. And like all the other quarterbacks in this rookie class, there's growing pains. Like, the Bears had Andy Dalton, so they had a guy they trusted, and Fields could come along, even though everybody was clamoring for him. Everywhere else, they jettisoned their would-be, you know, veteran guy. Right, Jacksonville said, all right, Gardner Minshew, you're gone. You're off to Philadelphia. It's Trevor Lawrence's show. Has that been a good return? Do you think that he's learned some good things in this, or is he developing bad habits as he runs for his life?
You know, the crazy thing about Justin Fields and is a guy who watched a good 2 years, you know, of every game he played at Ohio State, was I think sometimes, Mike, and it happens a lot in college football, especially with a lot of fans, is you only see certain games. And I think that there's a certain aspect of fans out there that saw the national championship game against Alabama, where Alabama was just on a completely other level, saw the Big Ten title game against your Northwestern Wildcats when Ohio State ended up running the football a lot behind Trey Sermon in that game. But Chris Olave didn't play, but Fields had a tough day in that one. And then they had their pandemic game against Indiana, where in the pandemic season, where he was picked off three times. They were up early, but he ended up, you know, making some bad throws. I'm not trying to give him excuses, but sometimes there's a narrative as well, and people don't realize that this was one of the highest rated high school recruits to, you know, come out of high school. And it was actually, before Quinn Ewers went to Ohio State, his rating was higher than any other Ohio State player that had ever been in a Buckeye uniform. So the point is the talent's there. And and even, Mike, the narrative of playing behind Jake Fromm in Georgia may stick with him a little bit as well.
Sure.
But he's off the, you know, off the charts. Like, there's athleticism, there is talent, there's something there. You got to bring somebody in to bring them on. Even if there was just one play that he did well in Chicago, Matt Nagy should have ran it four or five times. Just didn't seem like that was the case on Sunday.
No, and that's the frustrating thing, is it, to your point of what you've seen over his couple of years as a collegiate athlete, what you know of his skill set, and what you know of your deficiencies as a team. You don't have anybody that's going to be able to break containment that is going to win the one-on-one matchup.
Sure.
Robinson will on occasion. But Cole Kmet a couple of times went back to the huddle looking at him going, how did you miss me?
Yeah.
Right? If you read the lips, and he was called out, you know, on the broadcast, Greg Olson was doing it, right? A guy who played tight end in Chicago. And look, I think it's refreshing. A lot more guys in the booth are just calling what they see as opposed to euphemisms and soft shoeing around issues, right? We see that with Aqib Talib on Fox and several others. It's like, all right, if the quarterback misses a read and an obvious, you know, easy completion to a tight end when they're struggling, you got to call it out, right? There's a gap in that process. And it's not that Fields won't be an electrifying dominant player eventually. We can be okay with the fact that he's not there right now for everybody that wanted to see him on the field. You know, you drafted him that early. I command you. It's like, I get it. I understand the rookie contracts and wanting to get as much bang for your buck before you have to pay a guy. But again, if you've gone through the assessments and you've recognized maybe he's not right, and maybe your coaching staff isn't doing the right things, because that can also be true in all this. And again, with Nagy and his staff, that's what I raised my hand to in the play calling. He was noncommittal about who was going to call plays this week four game, Dan, as well, where somehow they're 3-point favorites over Detroit. Riddle me that, Batman. But just
my Lions?
Your Lions, Dan Beyer, are heading to Chicago, and the Bears are a 3-point favorite after that debacle. But like, all there's all these swirling pieces to it, and I think just the overall thirst for, all right, let's see Justin Fields run amok, it wasn't there between the game plan and how he executed, right? Because the other thing is, you know, pre-snap reads and all of that other stuff. As a rookie, it's going to be different. You're not there yet, right? And the plays and breaking containment and getting him to the outside, all of that wasn't there. So he was set up to fail, and he did. And there's no other way to describe the miserable effort that the Bears put forth in Sunday on Sunday's game. But they did score 6 points, which is, again, more than my colleague Jason Smith's Jets. So I'll just keep reminding him of that.
That may be a perfect transition, because I want to talk about waiver ads for week four. And I'm going to throw out a name. And I know you, especially coming off of a game where you didn't score any points, I do think that there could be an opportunity for someone like Michael Carter, who's only owned in about 50% of leagues. And if he is owned in leagues, likely is not seeing the light of day. They do have the Titans this week, and they have the Falcons coming up next week. I think there could be an opportunity, and I think that he is going to start to see more had the most carries against the Broncos coming up, or this past weekend. There could be an opportunity for Michael Carter maybe to be a guy that you would maybe want to add in the near future.
Absolutely, right? I mean, when we go down the list of available players, Carter, I think, would be one of those speculative long-term plays. And like you said, a couple of spots on the schedule that should have some results. We're starting to see a little bit in Wilson finding his favorites in the receiving game, but you don't have any veterans that are holdovers with any real attachment to that starting job in the backfield. So Carter should see a bigger percentage. I mean, obviously the waiver wire darling of the week is Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah,
with McCaffrey out 2-6 weeks, who knows? But
the one good news was that Matt Rhule did say on Monday that McCaffrey was not going to be a candidate for IR at this time. So that's the one good news for it, but obviously you're still going to want to pick up Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah, the short term, I mean, he was targeted 5 times in the game, 3 catches. So you're going to, if you're in PPR leagues, there will still be a little bit of love there. Much like when we talked about Mike Davis a bunch last year, and now he's gone to Atlanta to die in terms of fantasy value on a weekly basis. He'll pop up on the radar a few times for you as we hit the bye weeks and everything, Dan, but otherwise done. The only other real running back with a workload, and he was only picked up in like 8% of leagues. We mentioned Peyton Barber before.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the workload split is?
Yeah.
Right? And how quickly Jacobs comes back. Because, right, you're winning, so there's no need to rush him back either. So if he's not right and he's a guy with an injury history, you know, Barber's a guy that's still sitting out there in so many leagues. He saved my bacon in a guillotine league, as you and I talked about off air. But, big times there. Other guys on the wire, you know, you look at Tim Patrick based on a solid target count and the number of injuries in Denver. Now Hamler goes out along with Judy, who's got a couple more weeks before he'll be back. Emmanuel Sanders has his breakthrough with 2 touchdown receptions. But you look at a steady target count, 8, 6, and 6 through the first 3 weeks of the season. Jacoby Myers still available in about 40% of leagues. Yeah, I don't think you're going to get a lot of high point totals in terms of Mac Jones producing, you know, 30 plus points for that New England offense. But look at the target count. 9, 6, and 14 in his 3 weeks. Yes, some smallish yardage efforts, but if you're going to give me from my WR3, you know, 4 and 38 is going to be my floor, and I'm getting 7.8 out of that spot. You could certainly do a lot worse. As far as you got Christian Kirk in Arizona spreading the ball around, get another tight end in with Dawson Knox of your Buffalo Bills, available in about 90% of leagues as well. 10 catches on 12 targets. And how about Tommy Tremble?
Ah, yes.
Well, let's roll the dice, right? They traded Dan Arnold away, so we will no longer have Sam Darnold and Dan Arnold together. but Tremble had that 7-yard touchdown run in the Thursday night game. Perhaps a bigger target count will flow for him going forward.
Yeah, I think the Peyton Barber something is definitely worth watching, because the Josh Jacobs train it's not moving as fast as it was 2 years ago.
Sure.
Let me just put it that way. Like the excitement over Josh Jacobs and fantasy wise, and still while the lead back, I mean, how many red flags were there because of the Kenyon Drake signing that they had in the offseason on what it could mean for Josh Jacobs? But now you've got Peyton Barber coming in and performing as well as he did against the Dolphins. That is all very fair. All right. Week 4. If you thought that your appetite was wet with Panthers Texans on Thursday night, they've done it to you again. Week 4, the Jacksonville Jaguars go to Cincinnati, taking on the Bengals. Mike, what advice can we give fantasy owners in advance of, I think it'll be an interesting game. I think we're going to see some fantasy results. I just don't know if they're all going to come from the Bengals, if Jacksonville's only going to come in the fourth quarter. What are we going to get? Who do we need to play in Week 4's opener between Jacksonville and Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think we're going to follow the script, right? Joe Burrow is going to be a back-end QB1 for me as I get my rankings together for the week. You're looking at solid receiving core. Hopefully we get T. Higgins back in the mix, but on the short week, perhaps not. We'll keep it apprised and keep an eye on that as we get closer to game time. But, you know, Joe Mixon's going to be a top 10 running back option. You can even start looking at the other wide receivers in Cincinnati. Certainly spread them around, because that defense is going to give you plenty of opportunity to make some plays. Jamar Chase has been fantastic thus far.
Yeah, four touchdowns so far this season. Has scored in every game so far.
And only one drop after identifying the ball. Perhaps he rope-a-doped everybody. I think I mentioned this before, Dan, of, oh, look how terrible I am. Oh, wait, not so much. And I'm just going to run past you, because he's been dominant. And right now I'm looking at him as a high-end number 2 wide receiver for this week. Obviously, he and Joe Burrow with that great rapport. You go a little bit deeper. Tyler Boyd is going to be more a WR3, but certainly on the radar as well for Jacksonville. Yeah, I'm not touching Trevor Lawrence. I'm not banking on saver points down the stretch. Just not not in my wheelhouse. James Robinson would be a back end number 2 with a wishing and a wanting and a hoping. And then in the receiver core, your guess is as good as mine, Dan. You want to roll the dice on Marvin Jones. You want to roll the dice on Chenault Jr. They're 3s or 4s and maybe low-end daily fantasy plays, because you're hoping for one big play in the fourth quarter. But right now it's an absolute disaster for Jacksonville. I hate to pick on him as much as I do, but it's just been one headline after the next. And if I'm going to say Matt Nagy looks overwhelmed, and he's a guy that's been at this for a few years, the fact that Vic Fangio called out Urban Meyer and his quote on, hey, every week's like facing Alabama, that's really where you're setting the bar for your season, and you've got another tough matchup against a pretty game Cincinnati squad here. That defense has some teeth up front as well.
That could be the defense that maybe you want to stream. I'll say this is the good news for James Robinson, a guy that I know you were high on in the offseason, mm-hmm. and I was as well, even though there was a lot of hype about Travis Etienne before he suffered his foot injury. This is what Urban Meyer said about James Robinson. in their week three loss to the Cardinals. I thought he was fantastic. He's been practicing like that. Just probably need to give him the ball even a little bit more. So if you have the opportunity, if you got a spot for him, I don't think that James Robinson would be a bad play if you were to play him on Thursday night.
There you go, buddy. Find your wins with some Jaguars. Look, that we celebrate all 272 of them. They're not all going to be A-list stars, and Tom Brady can only play one game a week. So we'll find some fun on Thursday night for sure, and look forward to dominating the setup for week four overall.
And again, if I can't take the Lions losing on a 66-yard field goal as a win when I picked them against the Ravens, Smith can't go around and claiming Jalen Hurts was the right prediction when he's not in the top five yet.
No,
that's all that I'm saying.
No, I agree. I tell you what, though, the fact that you threw that in at the back end of last week's podcast was just brilliant. Can the Lions get a home win against the Ravens?
Oh.
And then you said goodbye. And I remembered that in the moment as I watched that ball hit the crossbar.
I will admit as well, I do a little picks thing with my cousins back home in Wisconsin. My cousin that's my age and his kids who are, you know, 15 and 11 years old. We do a picks thing just straight up, you know, it's fun to do. And I picked the Lions straight up to beat the Baltimore Ravens. And oh, again, oh, so close. I will also say this. I did tweet earlier this season, Mike, that if anybody hates 60-yard field goals, then I don't want to be their friend. Yet I called for Cliff Kingsbury's job for the 68-yarder. So I guess I'm a hypocrite as well. That's what you've got for me. You can find me being hypocritical on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. You can find Mike, who's not a hypocrite, on Twitter at Swollen Dome. We'll do it in a few more days. Launch this baby on Friday morning. A new episode as we get you set for week four. It's been I Want Your Flex. We'll talk to you soon.